This happened. You talked about it on The Fan.
The most successful team in the history of professional sports. Starting the new millennium, the New York Yankees are once again world champions.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ah, good beat, Zoo, across the way. Coming out for the 1 o'clock hour. Mark Malusis with you, in for BT and Sal. Rolling for another hour right up until 2. Marash and Tiki, they come your way then. 888-808-1019 is your number to call. Bill in Brick, New Jersey, kicking off the 1 o'clock hour. What's going on, Billy?
Moose, good afternoon, my friend. First of all, let's get right into it. I agree with you 100% about the All-Star jersey. Ridiculous.
Oh, they're so ugly. They're so ugly. Like, stop overthinking it. Just let them wear the uniforms that they wear all season long. It just adds to it. It just is. What they're doing now is so awful.
Agreed. But here's my point, Met. Everyone knows the glaring weakness right now is the bullpen.
Yes.
To me, it's more than just the bullpen. The lineup is, in the beginning of the season, way too inconsistent. Pitching staff, at best, Moose, we're loaded with number threes and fours. We don't have an eight. So, to me, the Mets are far away from making any kind of splash in the playoffs. I would let Alonso go. I don't think he's a problem. I don't think he's also helping as well. I just think we got so much more other holes to fill besides him. We got to get some more pitching. What's your opinion?
I think the bullpen needs to be addressed. I think the lineup's really good. I mean, I think there's a lot to like when you're looking at this Met lineup and how they go about doing it. Alvarez is an absolute stud behind home plate. You like what you've seen from Vientos at third. Lindor, since getting moved up to the leadoff spot, has turned his season around. McNeil has been replaced by Iglesias. Iglesias has been, an absolute find. Just not
but
what
Iglesias
he has done.
He's an older gentleman.
I'm just talking about the here and now, for right now.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not talking about for the next 5 years. I'm just talking about if you're going to lean into the way that this team has played right now, Iglesias, from a chemistry standpoint, and from a production standpoint on the field, we've always known him to be a really good defensive player, and he's been a really positive offensive player and productive offensive player for the Mets. You'd like to see Alonso use the failures and the, I would say, lack of productivity in the first half. That lack of productivity continued during the All-Star game down in Arlington. Yeah. Didn't do anything. You'd love to see Pete have a big second half.
I agree with you. I wish we had Iglesias, this Iglesias 8 years ago. Younger, like 26-year-old Iglesias would be great. But thank you for your time. Enjoy your day today, Moose. Enjoy.
You got it, Bill. Enjoy your day as well. And, that's the Mets is, if you're a fan, you lean into it. You enjoy it. There's a lot to like. The Alonso question is going to be, and it could benefit the Mets. I heard, Evan and Tiki talking about it yesterday a little bit, and I think kind of concur where, he continues to have a down season. That contract that Pete was looking for might be a shorter-term deal with not a significant amount of money. Now, if you're thinking about the right now and you're thinking about this team's chances to potentially do damage this season and you're buying into the culture and the chemistry of this Met team and you want to be them to be a dangerous out come October and they're a playoff team in the National League, then you want Alonso to go out there and have an unbelievably productive second half. Cranford, New Jersey, we go. It's Dave. It's the Fan. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Moose, man. It's great to talk to you. Just a couple quick things for you. One, you're great at this. Love your 9 a.m. Sunday. That's a regular spot, right? You're on every 9 a.m. on Sunday?
Every 9 a.m. on Sunday, yes. It's a regular spot.
Yeah, so love that. And I love the fact, bro, that you take other, I think you work July 4th. Is that right?
I did work July 4th, yes.
You work July 4th. You're a hustler. We all appreciate it. But, man, sometimes I can't listen to the Fan. So be able to turn on July 4th and listen to the Fan and get you, man, it was awesome. So I want to go back to a football point on the Giants, which I think was pretty much a big part of your open. Barkley is an amazing talent, and no one's ever going to suggest otherwise. And I've been a big fan of his, and so I'm not going back on that. All I'm saying is him at that price running behind this same line because we can't. We've already seen what that looks like. It's not good enough. He's great. Don't get me wrong. He's a better runner than Singletary. But I think the Giants are going to be more productive running the ball this year because of the combination of a decent to good back and a decent to functional line than they would be with a superstar back and a line that just has historically imploded on itself. And so I like the direction. I think it was the smart decision. I think the Hard Knocks just showed you they had already made the decision. They knew. I don't think there was. I think they were pretty clear because I think they wanted Barkley back. They would have taken Barkley back at a contract similar to what they gave Singletary. There was no way he was ever going to agree to that. So, I mean, they had made their decisions. And as a fan, I think it gives us a better chance. Try to run the ball, protect it. Jones, get a good receiver, see where you go. Who knows?
Well, Dave, I agree with your assessment about you can be more productive even if you don't have as talented a running back if the offensive line is a lot more efficient in 2024 and better up front than they were last year. And that's not asking all that much because last year was really, really bad. I think it's a fair assessment coming off that show last night that the Giants as an organization, you know, as a group had decided that, you know, it was time for a change. And I think Barkley understood that as well. And Saquon lands in a really good spot, like we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, and people have discussed as well. It's a win-now situation in Philadelphia. He's going to have an opportunity to play again. And even though without Kelce at center, which is a huge loss for the Philadelphia Eagles, he's going to have an opportunity to play behind a really good offensive line for the most part, with really talented players with the expectations to be one of the teams to beat in the NFC.
I totally agree with you. And I would leave you with this one last thing, and that is, can you make hide or heel of like what the Cowboys are doing? Because the strength of their team has been their line for 10 years. And I don't know if you look at it, but if you do, it's, you know, they're changing their center. They're changing their left tackle. They're putting in a rookie. You know, they've got all the contract stuff going on, you know, out the wazoo. I don't like them, but at the end of the day, I don't know what that they have a plan. I'm not sure what the plan is.
Yeah, especially with I think the Cowboys are in a tough spot right now. I think you've seen the reports about McCarthy being frustrated down there in Dallas. You know, they've got decisions to make with Dak Prescott future. CeeDee Lamb obviously wants to get paid, rightfully so. They've got Micah Parsons. I mean, there are things down there in Dallas, and then you have a question about what exactly or how is it going to look for Dallas this upcoming year? And what you thought they were going to do this year in the offseason and then what it ended up being, I think you're not wrong. I think there are a lot of Cowboy fans that were left disappointed by the lack of activity and turnover when it comes to that roster. Jay in New London's up next to the Fan. Jay.
Hey, I'm going to be quick because I know you're busy. I'm talking about the Jets.
Yeah.
What I'm saying might sound crazy. I went to the Hard Knocks camp with Rex Ryan. I've been to a lot of pro camps. I coach in college. I'm not name dropping because I'm a nobody, but I think when somebody brought up the owner to let Rex Ryan and Tannenbaum go and cut the string on them, I thought that was the craziest thing I've ever seen. And they've been in free fall since. Okay. And Rex Ryan was a hell of a coach. And the thing about Rex, it's a business. But he didn't handle it that way. He was a people person. And I just think the Jets have not shown good direction and leadership. Letting Rex Ryan go is an example. Because I think he was as fine a coach as there was in the NFL. And in 2013, when they brought him back, I thought he was going to be the guy. But they let him go.
They changed the general manager and kept Rex, which I thought was a mistake.
Yes, they got rid of Tannenbaum, and they kept him. It's crazy.
Right, Tannenbaum, the famous quote where talent sets the floor and character sets the ceiling, right? That was the great Tannenbaum quote at the time when he was running the Jets, when they were looking at draft classes. I think it had run its course. I do.
You mean, think
Rex,
so?
They went to two AFC championship games. I think over the course of time, I think Rex's failure was that it was the pure focus on the defense and lack of a feel about what was going on with the rest of his team. And I also think that's a failure when you look at Robert Saleh as well. I think when you take over as a head coach, regardless of your background, whether it be special teams, whether it be OC, whether it be DC, whether it be a linebacker coach, whatever it might be, you're the head coach. It's got to be your vision for the entire team, not just that one phase of the team. And I think that's ultimately, now Rex was a likable guy. There's a lot of Jet fans that love and miss Rex Ryan, his personality, want to sit down, have a beer with him, all the things like that came along with Rex Ryan. He gave the Jets organization a personality, but in the end, it was time to move on.
Well, thanks, Moose.
You got it. I appreciate it, Jay. And you want to say, well, I mean, they've dropped off since then. Well, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, you're absolutely not wrong. Now it's a scenario of when you look at this team, you know, they're going to have the talent to be able to win. Are they going to have the staff that's capable of putting this team and these players in a position to win week in and week out, regardless of opponent? Joe in White Plains up next to the fan. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, Mark. Just a quick question. I want to pick your brain on a trade scenario for the Mets. And I know we've been looking for some reliever help. And I was wondering if you thought we would have a better chance at getting it, whether it was with an Alonso trade or for the prospects. And in the regards to that, I was thinking of a possible trade to free up Alonso, to let him go. If we traded somebody in the minors like Parada, since we have Alvarez as our catcher of the future, over to like the Rockies for McMahon to come over, that would free up first base for Vientos and free up Alonso to be traded away, where you have a platoon of McMahon and Iglesias to switch between second and third, since Iglesias has been coming in to replace Vientos in the later innings anyway for defensive.
Right. Well, but why the notion that you have to, why the decision that you want to rid yourself of Pete?
I personally don't want to get rid of Pete. I think he's going to be an asset for us, and I think his season this year is going to help us get him at a more affordable price. But I think he might be more desirable as opposed to some teams taking a chance on a prospect that may not pan out. You have somebody who's going to be a proven, you know, 35 plus home run hitter, almost 100 RBIs a year. It's more of a sure thing than a prospect that might draw some more desirable relief pitchers.
No, I'm not. Listen, I think the Pete would be more desirable because of what he's his resume and what he's accomplished on the major league level. My question, though, as a Met fan as you are, and like I like McMahon as a player. You know, we mentioned a caller called up earlier wanting to trade Parada for a reliever. Not necessarily the reliever I would trade for, but. You know, and not saying he's not having a good year, the closer for the Washington Nationals, he's got 25 saves. I think the apple for everyone's eyes would be Mason Miller. You'd have to pay a huge price to go get him from Oakland, but I think it would be a price that'd be worth paying, especially if you have a setup of Miller and Diaz in the back end. My question would be then, if you're looking at Pete being that productive and that would be more appealing to opposing teams, then why wouldn't you want that productivity on your team?
Well, I think we have a budding star in Vientos who can replace a lot of the power that Pete provides at the same position or at third. And I think there's more options out there for third base and replacements than first base.
I got you.
I thought Pete might be more desirable to as a trade target for a reliever like Mason Miller.
Yeah, but here's the deal, Joe, is that, you know, Alonso wouldn't be for the Athletics because the Athletics aren't looking to spend. Right? So... Sure. You know, Athletics, Oakland, you're looking to trade prospects more than anything else when you're looking at that caliber. When you're trading Alonso, you're looking at a contending team that's looking at Pete for the rest of this year and potentially signing him after the year, but with no guarantees that they would be able to sign him. So it doesn't necessarily match up when you're looking at an Oakland. You'd have to find a contending team that's got a hole at first base that, you know, would be willing, that's got relief pitching to spare, that would match up if you're going to make that kind of a trade. That's a difficult find at the MLB trade deadline.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the issue. You got it, Joe. Appreciate it. I appreciate the creativity, but I don't know if that's the one's necessarily going to work. Massapequa, we go. It's Rick. It's the fan. What's going on, Rick?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. A question about Alonso.
Yeah.
You guys are smarter than I am. I watch every game. Not every game, but almost as much as I can. What is it that I'm seeing that, or not seeing that you guys are seeing about Alonso? He never hits when you need him to hit. So why is he worth Judge money or $200 million? He's not even worth the 7 years, supposedly that we offered him $25 million a year for $150 to $175.
Yeah, right now he's not. He's having a bad year.
Yeah, but he's never...
Who exactly on this radio station has ever said that Pete Alonso is going to get a similar contract to Aaron Judge?
No, but I'm not saying anybody on the station. I'm like, that's what you hear, and I don't know if it's true, but he thinks he's not in Judge territory. He's not that type of player. Don't you think he is worth somewhere like the $20 to $25 million for 6 years for $150? But didn't he deny that from us?
Yeah, he rejected that trade. Correct. Well, Boris likes to take his players to free agency, and that's exactly what he's going to do with Pete Alonso. His down year could be of benefit to the Mets, where you could get him on a shorter-term deal with less committed financially long-term, potentially. You know, my whole thing with Alonso is I don't think, I said it on Monday, bears worth repeating, I don't think Pete Alonso should be playing anywhere else but Queens. It is home, and I get when you look at him and you look at the statistics and you're looking at some of the trends of him going down. He's only 29. He's not 34, 35 years old. I still think there's really productive years left in Pete Alonso's bat, and that power is there. I understand the doubles are up this year. He's not driving the ball over the fence. 19 home runs at the All-Star break. Everything that we've looked at Pete Alonso. However, for his career, what he has represented, I don't think there's going to be this stark, drastic drop-off at age 30, 31, 32. There might be at 34, 35, not over the next 3-4 years. I don't think there will be. I don't think he's handling the contract pressure well. I don't think he's reacting well, and obviously he's not producing.
Yeah, and one of the things I was happy about was, you know, getting David Stearns. These types of GMs need to make the tough decisions and be creative with this time of the year when we need players or certain players. I don't know who to get or what to do, but there's some tough decisions. I think Saravino's another guy that needs to, like, we need to shop him. You know, like, I think we got enough pitching. Like, there's got to be something that they're going to do here which could help us. I think the bats are okay. If you keep Pete, you keep Pete. I don't, you know, I just don't see him as a clutch hitter. I'd rather trade him to a team and get one of these guys that always get traded during this time of year, a bigger bat where they can replace his bat and, you know, maybe get some prospects. But I don't know. But it's just, Pete's a tough one over the past year.
Well, I think you give every right to believe in David Stearns and his vision and going out there and being creative. I think it's difficult to think about right now pairing guys off that have value to the team when the team right now is 3 games over .500, great vibe, great culture, and are a nationally wild card contender. I think that's impossible to do. Like, if you're a Met fan, believe. If you're a Met fan, lean into it. If you're a Met fan, like, enjoy what you've watched. And you have. You've responded. More people are showing up at Citi Field, watching on SNY, you know, Grimace, everything that you've gotten into, OMG, Candelita, Jose Iglesias, everyone's enjoyed it. Enjoy it. Because when the unexpected happens, that makes it that much more enjoyable. And that's what we've seen here with this Met team this year. I think Stearns, if you want to say he's going to take the emotion out of it, for sure. You know, the emotional connection to it, no doubt. But they also understand the business of winning. Like, we talked about Mara before and the conversation he had with Joe Shane about Saquon Barkley, and said he'd have a sleepless night if he ends up with Philadelphia. And he's thinking about Saquon being the most popular Met or popular Giant on the team by far. Well, that is true, right? He's looking at it from a business perspective. From a business perspective, it's good to win. And the Mets have been a winning, viable product for the last 6 or 7 weeks. They've been a readily watchable product. They've been an enjoyable product. The lineup has looked really good. You've had different heroes every single night. There's a lot to like. They've overcome a bullpen that has been disastrously bad at times. And the Alonso conversation always comes into play. Everyone wants to get into, like, what are you going to do with Pete? I get it. And we would be having a distinctly different conversation here, All-Star break, middle of the month of July, if this team was sitting 10, 9, 8 games under the .500 mark as compared to where we are right now. Completely different. Then you're talking about the future. Then you're talking about the vision. Then you're talking about what you can go out there and address this offseason, whether it be Juan Soto. What do you do with Alonso at the trade deadline? Do you deal him and then sign him back? Bregman. I mean, every conversation we've had before. Is there life potentially without Pete Alonso? There is. Do I think that would be a mistake? I do.
Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus. Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Our Call of the Day is brought to you by Ramsey Mazda. Choose wisely, choose Ramsey Mazda. Let's head out to Tinton Falls. It's Mark. It's The Fan. What's going on, Mark?
I'm going to talk to you about Chip. I got four little dogs.
Oh, nice. What breed? What breed of dog? Yeah.
Chihuahua, a Yorkie type of Maltese mix, and then I got a little Yorkie, and also that didn't like me for 6 years, and also a Terrier. My girlfriend passed away 2 years ago, so basically, more keeping together, which they were both, ours. So I do, and I'm busy, walk them, look. Your wife, who does, she's not big on the dog, and I'm an animal lover. Lock them both in the trunk for 3 hours. Go back and unlock the trunk. The one that has the biggest reaction to you, that's the one you keep.
Your advice is to lock my wife and the dog in the trunk for 3 hours, and whoever's happier to see me unlock the trunk is the one that stays.
Yeah, it's an old joke. I mean, someone always
says,
put your wife and the dog in the trunk for 3 hours.
Let's be realistic here. Like, happy wife, happy life. Like, there's, Hoff was going, you have to make it through the next 2 years. I'm like, Pete, I'm trying to make it through the week, all right? Not necessarily the next 2 years. I'm trying to survive. Get me to Sunday, all right? And then we'll see how Monday looks. In terms of sage advice, Sue, 1 to 10, in terms of, I mean, I think he was saying it in jest, but locking your dog and your significant other, and then whoever is happier to see you when you unlock the trunk is the one you keep.
I think both are going to be pretty pretty angry at you when you open that trunk, let's be honest. They'll both be a tandem at that point, though.
Right, exactly. There's no doubt. Sparky, Dobbs Ferry's up next to the phone. What's going on, Sparky? Hell of a call. What's up, Sparky?
Not much, Moose. First, with Aaron Rodgers, the Jets brought this whole situation on themselves the second they allowed him to be coach and general manager of the team. Okay, because I'm sorry. Last year, they bring the guy in. Making the playoffs, it's not what it's about. When you mortgage everything on this guy, you have to win the Super Bowl.
Well, that's it. You're no doubt 100% correct. You got to go out there and win the Super Bowl. That's the goal. You make that trade with the Green Bay Packers. You bring them aboard last offseason. It was due to injury, didn't work out year number one. Now let's hit the ground running, focus in on winning football games. That's the goal year number two, no doubt.
I mean, I'm just wondering, does this guy care about the Jets at all? He should be 100% doing everything for the Jets, not going to Egypt. I'm sorry. That's not acceptable.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. It really doesn't. And everyone's entitled to their own opinion. It could bother you, and that's fine. Well, I don't think it's outlandish. I think you can get frustrated because all you know, Sparky, is failure as a Jet fan. All you know is that, it's not going to work out. You don't expect success. You expect gloom and doom. So this is going to be a predictor of the future. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I really don't. I don't think him not being there at minicamp and being over in Egypt and going on a vacation – which he informed the Jets about, who the Jets then made it a PR disaster with their head coach and the terminology that they used. And he was talking out of both sides of his mouth. Instead of making the announcement before minicamp ever gets going that Aaron Rodgers is excused, we're A-OK as an organization, instead of as an organization saying there is nothing to see here, the Jets basically pulled back the blinds and said, look at everything. And that is a failure. That is what you don't do as an organization. And that's why Rodgers, as Rosenblatt told, I mentioned before from The Athletic said, Rodgers was a little bit bothered by the way that the Jets handled the whole mini camp situation with him. Now, does that have any leak over when training camp gets going? No, probably not. But you could understand his frustration by the way it was handled. Because if he told them and informed them and told them all that he was going to be over in Egypt and he was not going to be there in minicamp, why'd the Jets decide to handle it as an organization the way that they did?
And, as far as the Super Bowl, I was in eighth grade when the Jets won the Super Bowl, okay? I actually saw one. Now, about the Alonzo contract situation. In my mind, the only person at fault for that whole situation is Steve Cohen, okay? Because when Alonzo was at the top of his game, at that time, they were giving him a little tough time with the contract, yet they had no problem offering $325 million to a pitcher from Japan who never threw one inning in the majors.
Yeah, but it's two completely different things, Sparky. When you're looking at, you know, when you're talking about Yamamoto, who ended up signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers, you're talking about the asset of a starting pitcher being a dominant starting pitcher as compared to what Alonzo is as a player. And I respect Pete, but the value of the players are not one and the same. Pete's value as a power-hitting first baseman is not the same value or does not equate to an upper echelon starting pitcher who was downright dominant and brilliant over in Japan. That's not one and the same. So I don't fault Steve Cohen or David Stearns to flying over to Japan and having dinner with his significant others and family and all that and doing everything they could to wine and dine and convince Yoshinobu Yamamoto to sign here with the Mets. I don't. The Yankees were doing the same thing. He ended up wanting to be a teammate of Shohei Ohtani and the Los Angeles Dodgers. So he is gone. But you were part of the equation, part of the conversation. That has nothing to do with Pete Alonso. Alonso's negotiations are about, you know, his value, what he believes his perceived value is, what leverage he does have. You know, he's got to have a big second half if he's looking for the long-term contract that he's looking for. Otherwise, he'll probably, in essence, maybe sign a shorter-term deal and hit free agency after another couple big years. John in Easton, Pennsylvania is up next on the Fan. What's going on, Johnny?
How you doing, Mark? Enjoying the show all week.
Thanks a lot, John. Appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, everybody calling in about Alonzo and moving him or trading him. Or I don't get it because, if I'm not mistaken, his numbers are pretty similar to Bryce Harper in Philadelphia. And could you imagine the uproar in Philly if this was the conversation about getting rid of Harper? So Alonzo is a very good first baseman. He's got a couple of years, you know, ahead of him yet. And his numbers, if I'm not mistaken, are very similar to Harper's. So what's the big deal about, you know, why do we need to get rid of him? Keep him.
Well, they're not really similar. Harper's hitting .301. Alonzo's hitting .240. From a power perspective, yes, 19-21 in the favor of Harper. RBI perspective, yes, yeah, similar. I mean, I think it's like 51-52-61 for Harper. So they're not really the same when you're looking at the players. Harper's also signed to a long-term deal. We're not having these conversations about Pete Alonso if he was signed long-term. He is not. That's where it comes into the equation because of the of him getting set to hit free agency after the season.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see him resign. You know, I mean, he's, you know, been there forever. He wants to stay there. You don't get that too often anymore.
Well, yeah, and he's smart. He understands that, you know, that the Cohen is the richest singular owner in Major League Baseball. I don't think that's the only equation. I think he enjoys being a New York Met. I think he would like to remain here, but he also wants to maximize his value too. So the question is, how do the Mets value Pete Alonso? How does David Stearns value Pete Alonso? And then what is Pete Alonso's value if and when he hits the open market? I think the idea of moving Alonso at the MLB trade deadline, to me, logically, that doesn't make much sense unless it's a multitude of moves. Whereas a call of reference where then you're moving, you know, Vientos over to first base, you're bringing in an everyday third baseman, and you're going from that perspective. But then you've got to find the team and the contending team that's willing to add Pete Alonso, and then what are you exactly going to get back in return? But I'd be a little bit careful there. You know, I'm hoping for Pete's sake that he has a big-time second half. And if he has a big-time second half, when you look at this lineup and how productive they've been, even though Alonso is underwhelmed here in the first 95-plus games of the regular season, and he comes down the stretch absolutely scintillating, then exactly where do the Mets end up? And you'd like the Mets' chances of not just being a contending team and a wild-card team in the National League, but also then being a playoff team. Mario, he's back with us, Long Beach. What's up, Mario?
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing, Mario?
Nice show. Yeah, nice show. Little thing about Rodgers. I really think that, to me, I've been a Jet fan forever, and I'm a couple of years younger than Beningo, so I did get to see them when they won the Super Bowl years ago. So I really think that, to me, getting into the playoffs, winning one playoff game, I'm happy with that for this year. And then see what happens from there, you know? Because the Super Bowl, let's face it, you look at the Chiefs, you know, so you know what the percentage of them making the Super Bowl this year and the best team? 15%. It's not realistic to think all of a sudden the Jets have never been in the playoffs for so many years, they're going to win a Super Bowl. Get me into the playoffs. It's been so long, you know? And well, another thing is when...
Mario, you can. That's a realistic look at it, but the Jets are put together this year to try and win a Super Bowl. So if they make the playoffs, win a round, losing, say, the divisional round, or say they end up winning the division and end up losing in the AFC championship game, right? However way it looks. But if they end up getting, you know, that close and win a round, are you going to look back on it? If Rodgers has a really good year and he's going to be like, I'm going to be back for year number three and everything's great, yeah, then you're going to look at it and say, yeah, that's, we had a really wonderful season. A lot of great memories. Did the Jets fail ultimately at their goal? They did. Then the question is going to be is, well, what's the window looking like with Rodgers? How long is he willing to play? What's it going to look like at then, you know, 41, going to be 42 in December? We're looking at next year if he decides to suit up and play.
Yeah, can I make one quick point before you let me go?
Yeah.
The second point is when people start to say, oh, will he be injured? If you look at his career, the previous 5 years before that freak injury he had on the turf, and I believe the turf at MetLife Stadium had something to do with that, by the way. He played 16 games 4 years, 17 games 1 year. He's more like an Iron Man than he is injury prone. I don't really see him being injured. Thanks for taking my call. Great job in the afternoon.
Yeah, you got it, Mario. Appreciate it, buddy. I'm just concerned about how it looks with the injury that he suffered. That's all. I'm not going to tell you that he's going to re-injure. He's had collarbone issues in the past. I'm not going to tell you that he's going to re-injure his Achilles or suffer a hamstring injury, a groin, whatever it might be. It's not one and the same when you're looking at an injury history, say, to Daniel Jones. Obviously, Rodgers has been in the NFL for two decades. Jones has not. It's not to that level. It's a case of how does it look following that significant injury? That's all. At 40, going to be 41 in December. How does it look? How does he play the position? Does he have the same fluidity? Does he have the same escapability? Does he have the same movement in the pocket? All the things that you look at that have kind of, to go along with his decision-making, lack of interceptions, that has kind of defined what Aaron Rodgers is as a quarterback. Ability to elude the pass rush. Like all those things. How does it look for Rodgers now? Nobody knows that answer. Like I can't tell you definitively one way or the other. I could tell you I think Rodgers wants to prove a lot of people wrong. Could tell you that Rodgers is, I have every confidence in the world that you're going to get a really good brand of Aaron Rodgers. Can I guarantee it? I can't. Because of these circumstances that we have not seen, given his age. 142, Malusis with you, 888-808-1019. Back with your busy calls and more next.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
A perfect game for David Cone. The third time, works like a charm. It is the third perfect game in Yankee Stadium history. Don Larson in 56, David Wells in 98, David Cone in 99, 27 up, 27 down. David Cone has attained baseball immortality.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Couple things before we bid you adieu and hand it off to Sean and Tiki. They're going to take you through the afternoon. Evan is on his way or is in Mexico as we speak for a nice family vacation. So we wish Evan all the best. Couple things. Zoo and Hoff were telling me, what is the date for Hart and Brunson? What is the date that they're doing that in Central Park? Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson, they're going to be...
I believe that's the 17th of September. I got to double check it.
17th of September. I mean, the hits just keep on coming with Jalen Brunson. But 17th of September, Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson are going to be doing one of their podcasts from Central Park, which is fantastic. I mean, every step that Jalen Brunson makes is a winning step, whether for the last 2 years, what he developed into as a player, the instrument of change that he's been for the New York Knicks, the caliber of player developing into a superstar at Madison Square Garden, wanting the challenge of New York, taking the $157 million extension, still a ton of money, instead of waiting until next offseason where he could have gotten $270 million because he wanted to give the team more financial flexibility and wherewithal to be able to build a championship caliber team. fantastic. And now two of the Villanova four, Hart, Brunson, they're going to be in Central Park September 17th, correct?
It's actually September 7th, and they do have special guests to come here.
Okay.
They got John Stewart. They got Mikhail Bridges. No Dante DiVincenzo,
but
they do have J.B. Smoove.
Oh, J.B. Smoove.
And they have Knicks legend.
Clyde?
Stephon Marbury.
Oh, Starbury's going to make an appearance. That's going to be great. That's going to be fantastic. So September 7th, Zoo just gave you the rundown. John Stewart's going to be there. Stephon Marbury's going to be there. Mikhail Bridges is going to be there. Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson, give him a pop. They're going to be doing their podcast out at Central Park. And along the NBA theme of a different variety, and I heard, you know, Bogish doing a CBS Sports Minute on it, and there's been a lot of criticism or critique of Bronny James when he got drafted 55th overall by the Los Angeles Lakers based on what he did last year at USC and exactly where he's going to be, and the criticism obviously falls down to LeBron James. I really don't. It has nothing to do with what Woj and Stephen A. talked about on ESPN Draft Night the second day about nepotism in professional sports. It has nothing to do with that. LeBron James did what was best for his son. I think we could, if you have kids, you can relate with that. Even if you don't, if you have a caring heart, you can relate with that. Now, Bronny James will determine himself whether or not he can go out and play in the NBA, whether or not he could be what J.J. Redick said on a podcast the other day, that he could develop into being a Lou Dort in the NBA. Like, we'll all find out together. We'll all find out what he is exactly, a caliber of player. Was he impressive year number one at USC? No, but he also came off going into cardiac arrest, made his debut for USC, I think it was in December. I know he averaged under 5 points per game. I know he had a bad shooting night the other night in the NBA Summer League. But listen, we'll all find out. And maybe he can't, you know, and that's fine. You know, maybe, you know, Bronny James. But that opportunity, LeBron James has done more for the NBA. You know, and what he has been able to accomplish, the legacy that is still ongoing, to be able to kind of help out one of his kids in realizing a dream. And that's really all that it is. And I don't understand, like, why people feel the need to go out there. And maybe it's because you have hatred toward LeBron. Maybe it's a case that, you know, you favor Michael Jordan. Maybe you can't stand the storyline. Maybe it's a case that bothers you that, you know, he's getting preferential treatment. Well, you know, he's the 55th overall pick in the second round of the NBA draft. You know, he got to USC. Doors are going to be opened, as they always are. You know, and you see it in the MLB draft. You see it all the time. When you are the son or you are the daughter of a sports legend, yeah, doors are going to open for you. And that's going to be the case. Not what you know at times, it's who you know. And obviously, Bronny James has got a very, very influential father in LeBron James. But if you're going to take and be ultra critical of it, I mean, get a life. You know, because the proof is going to be in the pudding, whether or not he can play. He's not going to be able to hold on for all that long if he can't develop, if he can't get better, if he can't hang in the NBA. That I do know is true because we've seen it time and time again. You can't hide, you can't run, you can't do anything. The association will decide whether or not you can play in the league. And they'll figure it out and we'll all see it together. I'm not going to overreact to what he does in the summer league. I'm going to be, okay, great. He gets an opportunity. His father's LeBron James. He gets drafted 55th overall. He went to USC. Wasn't all that impressive. We'll see exactly what he is. Has a nice vertical leap. Isn't all that big standing at 6'2 when you're looking at NBA guards. Now, what can he be in the association? We'll see. We'll see. But those that are rooting for failure or ripping LeBron or ripping the Lakers for drafting him, well, we all knew. He wasn't going number one overall. He wasn't a first-round draft choice. I mean, it was basically pegged for months or at least a month that, you know, that Bronny James was going to be selected by the Los Angeles Lakers in the second round. You knew it. His dad talked about the dream of playing with his son. And you get that. And that doesn't give you kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling to create a cool moment in this upcoming NBA regular season where they're in the same game together. Well, if you don't get that, then, you know, in the end, say to yourself, well, then I've got nothing for you. I don't know what to tell you. Pretty cool moment. It'll be fun to see what he develops into. Early returns, nothing all that much, but he's awfully young. And he's still got great athletic ability. Zoo, fantastic job stepping in for Dove. By the way, Zoo, odds that Dove has pink eye is what?
I think the books have it set at about a plus 200.
There you go. I want to thank Sean for giving me a wild berry, triple berry Wendy's Frosty, which was fantastic. Hoff, stressed out, yelling at calls across the way. Great job as always. Really enjoyed it the last 4 hours, guys. Thanks for the calls. Be back with you tomorrow morning at 10. Keep it locked right here. Sean, Tiki, they come your way next. Take you through this Wednesday afternoon right here. Where else? The Fan in New York.
And you talk about it on The Fan.
A perfect game for David Cohn. The third time, works like a charm. It is the third perfect game in Yankee Stadium history. Don Larson in 56, David Wells in 98, David Cohn in 99. 27 up, 27 down. David Cohn has attained baseball immortality.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Couple things before we bid you adieu and hand it off to Sean and Tiki. They're going to take you through the afternoon. Evan is on his way or is in Mexico as we speak for a nice family vacation. So we wish Evan all the best. Couple things. Zoo and Hoff were telling me, what is the date for Hart and Brunson? What is the date that they're doing that in Central Park? Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson. They're going to
I believe that's the 17th of September. I got to double check it.
17th of September. I mean, the hits just keep on coming with Jalen Brunson. But 17th of September, Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson are going to be doing one of their podcasts from Central Park, which is fantastic. I mean, every step that Jalen Brunson makes is a winning step, whether for the last 2 years, what he developed into as a player, the instrument of change that he's been for the New York Knicks, the caliber of player developing into a superstar at Madison Square Garden, wanting the challenge of New York, taking the $157 million extension, still a ton of money, instead of waiting until next offseason where he could have gotten $270 million because he wanted to give the team more financial flexibility and wherewithal to be able to build a championship caliber team. Fantastic. And now, two of the Villanova four, Hart, Brunson, they're going to be in Central Park September 17th, correct?
It's actually September 7th, and they do have special guests to come here.
Okay.
They got John Stewart. They got Mikhail Bridges. No Dante DiVincenzo,
no Dante.
But they do have J.B. Smoove.
Oh, J.B. Smoove.
And they have Knicks legend.
Clyde?
Stephon Marbury.
Oh, Starbury's going to make an appearance. That's going to be great. That's going to be fantastic. So September 7th, Zoo just gave you the rundown. John Stewart's going to be there. Stephon Marbury's going to be there. Mikhail Bridges is going to be there. Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson, give him a pop. They're going to be doing their podcast out at Central Park. Along the NBA theme of a different variety, and I heard, you know, Bogish doing a CBS Sports Minute on it, and there's been a lot of criticism or critique of Bronny James when he got drafted 55th overall by the Los Angeles Lakers based on what he did last year at USC and exactly where he's going to be. And the criticism obviously falls down to LeBron James. I really don't. It has nothing to do with what Woj and Stephen A. talked about on ESPN draft night the second day about nepotism in professional sports. It has nothing to do with that. LeBron James did what was best for his son. I think we could, if you have kids, you can relate with that. Even if you don't, if you have a caring heart, you can relate with that. Now, Bronny James will determine himself whether or not he can go out and play in the NBA, whether or not he could be what J.J. Redick said on a podcast the other day, that he could develop into being a Lou Dort in the NBA. Like, we'll all find out together. We'll all find out what he is exactly, a caliber of player. Was he impressive year number one at USC? No, but he also came off of going into cardiac arrest. Made his debut for USC, I think it was in December. I know he averaged under 5 points per game. I know he had a bad shooting night the other night in the NBA Summer League. But listen, we'll all find out. And maybe he can't, and that's fine. You know, maybe, you know, Bronny James. But that opportunity, LeBron James has done more for the NBA. You know, and what he has been able to accomplish, the legacy that is still ongoing, to be able to kind of help out one of his kids in realizing a dream. And that's really all that it is. And I don't understand, like, why people feel the need to go out there. And maybe it's because you have hatred toward LeBron. Maybe it's a case that, you know, you favor Michael Jordan. Maybe you can't stand the storyline. Maybe it's a case that bothers you that, you know, he's getting preferential treatment. Well, you know, he's the 55th overall pick in the second round of the NBA draft. You know, he got to USC. Doors are going to be opened, as they always are. You know, and you see it in the MLB draft. You see it all the time. When you are the son or you are the daughter of a sports legend, yeah, doors are going to open for you. And that's going to be the case. Not what you know at times, it's who you know. And obviously, Bronny James has got a very, very influential father in LeBron James. But if you're going to take and be ultra critical of it, I mean, get a life. You know, because the proof is going to be in the pudding, whether or not he can play. He's not going to be able to hold on for all that long if he can't develop, if he can't get better, if he can't hang in the NBA. That I do know is true because we've seen it time and time again. You can't hide, you can't run, you can't do anything. The association will decide whether or not you can play in the league. And they'll figure it out and we'll all see it together. I'm not going to overreact to what he does in the summer league. I'm going to be, okay, great. He gets an opportunity. His father's LeBron James. He gets drafted 55th overall. He went to USC. Wasn't all that impressive. We'll see exactly what he is. Has a nice vertical leap. Isn't all that big standing at 6'2 when you're looking at NBA guards. Now, what can he be in the association? We'll see. We'll see. But those that are rooting for failure or ripping LeBron or ripping the Lakers for drafting him, well, we all knew. He wasn't going number one overall. He wasn't a first-round draft choice. I mean, it was basically pegged for months or at least a month that, you know, that Bronny James was going to be selected by the Los Angeles Lakers in the second round. You knew it. His dad talked about the dream of playing with his son. And you get that. And that doesn't give you kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling to create a cool moment in this upcoming NBA regular season where they're in the same game together. Well, if you don't get that, then, you know, in the end, say to yourself, well, then I've got nothing for you. I don't know what to tell you. Pretty cool moment. It'll be fun to see what he develops into. Early returns, nothing all that much, but he's awfully young, and he's still got great athletic ability. Zoo, fantastic job stepping in for Dove. By the way, Zoo, odds that Dove has pink eye is what?
I think the books have it set at about a plus 200.
There you go. I want to thank Sean for giving me a wild berry, triple berry Wendy's Frosty, which was fantastic. Hoff, stressed out, yelling at calls across the way. Great job as always. Really enjoyed it the last 4 hours, guys. Thanks for the calls. Be back with you tomorrow morning at 10. Keep it locked right here. Sean, Tiki, they come your way next. Take you through this Wednesday afternoon right here. Where else? The Fan in New York.